All right. So about a year back, one of the operators in one of our data centers for one of our services came to me and said he was tired of the fact that at some point the disk firmware stopped and they had to replace the disk. He wanted at least 8 hours of warning before this happens. And I thought that was really difficult, and I told him so, and I'm not the person to do it. And then he showed me the following picture that I'm going to show to you, and he said, "No, no, 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 no. We can do this. We can do this." And he showed me this signal. So let me tell you the axis. One is obscured by petition of the operating staff, but it's time, okay? And the x-axis is actually sample. Is every 20 minutes there is a sample of this signal. And yes, the purple one is the soon-to-fail disk. That's STF. That's the signal, same signal for soon-to-fail disks. And the bottom ones, the ones at the very bottom, are the healthy disks. And when I saw this, I said, "Well, there is a prayer that we can do this. This is actually 8 hours before the disk fails, and the disk fails because they changed this. They changed the disk. That's why everything goes to zero." However, the signals are not that nice. This is another disk that failed. And again, there is some difference between the normal disks and the failing disks, but the signal is a bit, the shape is a bit different. It's the peaks that are more pronounced. It's not a continuous activity on a high level. Let me show you two more. This is 4 days before failure. Again, I'm going to move over there. This is something anybody would expect. You know, there's some disks are normal. This is 4 days before failure, and suddenly, boom, 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 things start to fail. They start to increase that precise, same signal. However, this one is higher, is tougher to detect, right? Because first of all, you have this normal disk that is having these bumps, and the signal, you know, goes up and down, has this big peak, boom, and then fails. Okay? So, seem possible and challenging enough. So, what are the objectives of this talk? So, the objective is not, a lot of people have approached me and said, "Oh, so you're saying that smart signals are useless." No, that's not what I'm going to claim. The objective is, in this talk, I'm going to build with you guys a detector for those signals. And I'm going to quantify how effective is this detector. And I'm hoping that this will inspire you to look for performance signals, because I think there is data in this thing. There is information in this signal, as evidenced by this work. And I'm going to do that by quantifying this. And I hope that this inspires further research into finding out how can we correlate these signals to smart signals that perhaps going to indicate what's the cause for this disk failing. All right? And I'm going to tell you, I didn't find, by the way, a reliable correlation between the smart signals and that performance signals, but I'm going to also tell you hypotheses that I haven't been able to test of why. The reason I haven't been able to test it is because in my population, I had 34 failing disks in the data I have, 34 failing disks, and a population of 2,000. Okay, so that was not enough to establish a worthy of publishing correlation. Okay, so let's go. So I'm going to make one assumption, and this is the assumption I'm going to make, that we all believe that this is important. Okay, so then what's the setup? We want to predict this failure. There is an initial state of uncertainty. You got a population of 100,000 disks in your data center. And predicting the future usually involves a tax. That tax is expressed as false positives. You're going to err. And the decision whether on how to act, I'm going to replace this beforehand, before time. Oh, man, thank you. I always wanted to do this. The decision of whether and how to act is going to depend on that trade-off. How much tax for the candy? Okay, So what do I refer by the initial state of uncertainty? Well, the manufacturer gives you some figure of this that will fail. And it's not always easy to even interpret what that percentage means. It means that, you know, if I pick a random disk, it will fail with this probability, or it means that, you know, over a year you expect this percentage of the population. There's some uncertainty there, but, you know, we have a figure, and then when you have your disk in your laptop, you can move on happily ever after. When you have a lot of disk in your service and you're providing a service and you want to claim the service is completely reliable, you want some indication of where are those disks. That's my haystack. So what do we want? Well, we want some spotlights. Tell me something about which disks are likely to fail. And, you know, I'm going to miss some. Ah, man. No, it's there. I'm going to miss some in the corner, and I'm going to get some of those are going to be false positives. I'm going to tell you it's going to fail, but they're not going to fail. And I want to minimize false positives and maximize detection, okay? And these are the results I got. 56% false positives and 88.2% detection. That's the estimate of the one I'm going to offer. So let's build that. Now, oh, man. Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you very much. So there's a lot of related work, and I didn't comb out all the field. I hope that the reviewers did with me. But there's one very, very, very good paper by Google that stated the following claim, and I'm quoting. It is unlikely that we can find predictive signal in smart diagnostic data. In my experience, that was the case. But again, I'm not claiming that is the case. That was the case with the 34 disks I looked at. But we're going to use performance data. I'm going to use a performance signal, not the smart signals. Okay? So let's move on. So the disks, I have a cluster of 144 servers. Each server has 34 drives in an array. The drives are 750 gigabytes SATA, which somebody told me is pronounced SATA. And I have 1 month of data. That's what I have. Signals, I have no control over this interface, neither had the operator. The signals are displayed to him every 20 minutes. That's it. That's the way it is. Okay. So this SOI, the signal of interest, the signal I showed you, is the average max latency signal for the disk. And this is computed as follows, to the best of my understanding. Every minute, it's recorded, it's sampled. I think every second is sampled, it's recorded what is the maximum latency, and then it's averaged over the 20 minutes. So those signals you saw were averaged over 20 minutes of the average, so of the maximum latency, okay? Now, what is failure? The definition of failure is the same as was used in that Google paper, when the disk is changed. So the operator doesn't see, and actually he doesn't, he's not even physically in the data center. So the serial number of the disk is changed in the log. That represents failure. And it has all kind of mixed signals. I mean, it could have been changed for any other reason, but that's how what we're going to take as the disk failed. And I have 1 month of data. All right. So how did I build this detector? So I'm going to base it on statistics. I'm going to build statistical models about these disks. So this is the methodology. I took my population, and I divided it in two halves. The first half is called train. The second half is called test. What does it mean to train? Well, what does it mean that I'm going to do whatever I want with that data to estimate the model parameter? So I'm going to give you a parametric model, much like a Gaussian distribution is a parametric model. I need to only to estimate the mean and the variance, and I have the whole distribution. The same thing I'm going to do with these models. So the training data, I'm going to use statistical, well-founded statistical methodology to estimate the parameters of the model. Once I'm happy with my model, and only then, I'm going to look at the test data. That data will not be seen at any point during the training. And during the test, I'm going to estimate how well does my predictor perform. Okay, so there's no contamination between the test and the trained data other than they come from the same population of disks. I hope this is clear. So I only see the test data once, And this is the numbers I'm reporting. All right. So now we're ready to dive into the meat of the talk, which is what are these models and how the heck am I going to train them? So this is the detector. I'm going to spend quite some time on this slide. Okay. So we have the signal, and I take 24 hours of this signal at a time. So I have a chunk of 24 hours, and it's a time series. And I'm going to take from this signal two pieces of information, one on this side and one on this side. So let me start with this side, which is the more complicated. I'm actually going to build two models. Remember, I know, okay, so I have, by the way, I have 1,190 disks. 17 of those failed. I know that. And I know when they failed. Well, I know approximately. I know when they changed the serial number. I'm going to assume that's the point they failed. So I'm going to build two models, one model for the soon-to-fail disks and one model for the healthy disks. Actually, these models are probability distributions. And when the output of each one of these models is that given 24 hours, I'm going to pass the same data to the model for the soon-to-fail disks, and that's going to give me the probability that that model generated that data. And I'm going to do the same thing for a healthy disk. For the model of the healthy disk. I'm going to take the same data, put it through that model, and I'm going to compute the probability that that data comes from a healthy disk. And then I'm going to compute the ratio, the probability that it comes from a soon-to-fail over the probability that it came from a healthy disk. If one is bigger than the other, I'm going to take that decision. I'm going to claim that this part of the detector says proportional log in the log scale of whether the disk is going to fail or not. That's one part of the signal. Two models, take the data and find out, okay, the data comes from this model, from this soon-to-fail disk or a healthy disk. Essentially, it's the same thing as if I give you a coin and I want to ask you, is this coin... healthy coin. Is the coin a fair coin or not? Well, you just throw it, and you have a model. 50-50 is a healthy, it's a fair coin. Other than that, it's not. So you have your model, you pass this, you perform the experiment, you get the data, how many tosses, and then you perform exactly the same computation. This was the toughest part of the detector. Let's move to the simpler. And I'm going to go into what does it mean to fit the parameters of this and what are the models. On this side, I'm going to have something very simple. This didn't work, but by the way, I tried this. Didn't work by itself so great. So it needed help. So here I'm going to count the peaks because we saw visually that there were a lot of peaks. So I'm going to put a threshold, and I'm going to tell you how I picked the threshold, how the threshold is picked, and I'm going to count during those 24 hours how many times the peak passed the threshold. Now I have two pieces of evidence, and I need to combine them. How am I going to combine the two pieces of evidence? Essentially, I'm going to have to assign weights to each side. Again, I'm going to do the statistic things to do, which is I'm going to build a model of this. One of the simplest models is a logistic regression. If you guys are familiar with regression, which I'm sure everybody here is, logistic regression is exactly the same thing, right? I have a set of things that predict. I put weights on them, except that they predict into 0 or 1. Is it or is it not? That's all. And we're going to go into it, but just going to give you a preview. So my training here is going to be to compute those weights. I have the data. So I'm going to pass it through, use statistics, and compute those weights. So now let's go into each one of these models a little bit more. So the first model, the model on the left, that was more complicated, is essentially a hidden Markov model. Okay? So I'm going to try to give you a very fuzzy feeling of what a hidden Markov model is. So let me start with intuition. The intuition is as follows. This is the signal we had before. So the assumption in this model, as any model has assumption, is that the device is in one of many states. Each state captures part of the output of the signal. So for example, the state 3 says that, you know, is when the signal is in between this range. State 2 is when the signal is in this range. And state 1 is when the signal is very high. And it assumes that the device transitions from one state to the other as it operates. So for example, in this case, you know, we have the device is in the blue, is blue again, then, goes down to yellow, goes to blue, goes to red, and so on and so forth. Okay, that's what the assumption that the model makes. So here they are in their whole glory, not much more complicated. You have a set of observations. This is the signal of the data. These nodes are actually Bayesian networks. Judea Pearl, ACM Turing Award, this is a Bayesian network. It's a hidden Markov model. So this is, you observe this signal. These states, you don't know. You don't know in what state it is. The whole point of the statistical induction is to find out from the data what are the parameters of two probability distributions. One is the probability that in one state, how do I move to the next state? And the second one is the probability that if I'm in a state, I output certain values. So I have to fit these two probability distributions. This is, again, statistical lore. So how do I'm going to parameterize this distribution? Well, when I'm in a state, the values I'm going to output, I'm going to assume it's sampled from a Gaussian distribution with a mean that depends on the state and a variance that depends on the state. Now, why a Gaussian distribution? So first of all, if you're saying, well, what if the distribution is not Gaussian? Oh, my God, what's going to happen? Don't panic. You can do a mixture of Gaussians. You can do all more complicated distributions there. But I had a problem, and the problem is the following. I have only 17 disks to train this, because the other 17 disks I'm going to use on the testing, the 17 other 17 failed disks. I don't have enough to train a more complicated model. Remember, I don't have to characterize this precisely. I have to characterize it precisely enough so I can distinguish between one set of disks and the other set of disks. And a Gaussian distribution is first very efficient in terms of fitting these parameters. So I don't have to have too many, 17, hopefully is enough. And it can tolerate an error between the whole thing. Now, for the transition from one state to the next, I'm going to use a multinomial distribution. And there's nothing to say about that. This is what is currently used, the distribution that it is. I mean, how many times if I see state one, I'm going to go to state two? How many times? Nothing there. Now, the other important point is the number of states is also a parameter. It can be 1, 2, 3, etc. So here, there are many ways to do this. Here is one. What you do is you do a linear search. You assume, well, it's not going to have, in this case, this is not speech recognition where there are thousands of sounds. You assume there is a finite number of states and fairly low, and you do a linear search. You feed the model with one state. You score it. You feed the model with two states. You score it, and so on until you minimize your score. The way you minimize your score, you're something, there are many ways to do this, the whole industry. The one I pick is the BIC, big score. And I just forgot what BIC stands for, but I can tell you what it is. It's very simple. It has two components. One component is, again, and this may seem recursive, but it's not, is the probability that the data came from this model. And remember, this will all increase as I add states. So the big score, on the other hand, has what's called a regularization parameter. As you add more parameters, it penalizes for your fitting. And that prevents you to say, well, 10 states is better than 9 states. Of course it is, but since you're adding more states, you're going to pay a penalty for doing that. That's called a regularization. Where does it come from? It comes from actually taking the first components of a Taylor expansion of the likelihood. Okay, so this is an approximation. Now, I'm constrained several ways into doing this. Remember, I'm comparing the probability of a healthy disk to a probability of a soon-to-fail disk. So on healthy disk, I have much more. I have 1,100 disks. So I could fit more complex distributions. But if I do that, I cannot compare these two distributions because I would be comparing oranges to apples. So I'm constrained on the number of states and on the quality of this distribution by the soon-to-fail disk, which there are two, and they're few. They're just a few. Okay? So this was long, I know, but I hope by now, first, I'm hoping to demystify anything that anybody comes in and says, well, I did this by machine learning. No. This is statistics. It's well known. There are algorithms. And this is charted territory. We just need to read the charts. So let me give you a sense of what these models look like. So here are the means, and I'm scaling this, of a healthy disk versus a soon-to-fail disk. So the big score was maximized in that case by the soon-to-fail disk with 3 states. So I was actually the healthy disk tolerated more states, but I had to stop at 3. So if you see, first of all, it's a healthy fit in the sense that, you know, there's almost an order of magnitude between these days. Remember, this is when I'm in this state, this is the mean of the signal that I'm seeing. And second of all, there's little overlap between these two. The overlap is in this region. So this is one thing that tells me, okay, I'm doing fine. Now, there's another component that involves hearing, the differentiation between the soon-to-fail disc and the healthy disc, and that is how the states transition. And if you see here, this is the matrix of state transition. How you read this is, you know, if I'm state one, if I'm healthy and I'm in state one, namely in the highest, when I'm producing the highest, I have a 70%, 76% probability of staying in that state and a 30% probability to go in low. However, if I'm in, you know, either in the medium region or in the low region, I have a over 90% probability, 99, 97, to staying there. That's the behavior we saw in the normal discs. Contrast that with the unhealthy discs. If I'm high, I'm going to have 85% probability of staying high. I wish that was true in reality. And if I'm in these two states, I actually have a 60% probability of staying and a 30% probability of switching states. So this is what we observe too. It's highly unstable, this distribution. So I'm happy with this model. This is how you more or less you verify these things. But this was not enough. I needed another part of the signal, and this was the peak detector. And I'm putting this signal on purpose because actually this was one of the signals in which I didn't get so much distinction between a healthy disc and an unhealthy disc. So I took peaks that were 7 standard deviations above the mean of a normal disc. I had a very robust estimation of the mean and the variance. Why? Because I have 1,100 of these discs. So I took 7. If you know anything crosses a 7 standard deviations, you know, this is something I want to take into account. So this was easy. Now finally the final step, and almost done with the detector. So this is the logistic regression. This is the form of it. And I'm going to demystify very fast. So it says, well, I'm going to say the probability that this is a failing disk versus a healthy disk is just a linear combination of the two things I'm going to look at. How many peaks in the 24-hour period and the log odds, remember the ratio of the probabilities from the HMM models. And the task is to fit these parameters, and this is standard Lorentz statistics. You just push it through, and it comes out and tells you what the parameters are. Okay? How do I know that this is a good model? Well, some basic statistics test, you look at the parameters. The parameters, usually they give you a p-value that tells you the parameters are far from zero. These parameters were far from zero, and also and statistically. And also they were of the same magnitude, so this was a sound model. Okay? Now, I have another degree of freedom. What is this beta zero? This beta zero establishes the prior proportions of failed disk and non-failing disk. It also gives me how much, you know, how much this ratio has to be over another in order to me to believe and say yes. And this I'm going to fit simply by looking, by fitting with these parameters, and I'm going to tell you how exactly. So how do I put this all together? Well, I divided it into two sets. 1,190 disks with 17 failed disks on each side. So on the training set, I took 12 failed disks and 48 healthy disks, and I trained the HMMs. The Viterbi algorithm is well known. Again, you read the paper, it's 1960, and tells you how to deploy the algorithm that simply takes the data and fits the parameters of the means, the variances, and the multinomial force transition states. Okay, so I fit that. Then I added 200 disks and trained the logistic regression. So I get the betas. I'm almost done. Now I wanna put the threshold such that I believe my detector. My detector is gonna give me my detection is going to give me, you know, how much should I believe my detector or not, And what I did is I run it on the other 900 disks and try to minimize the false positive without losing much detection. Why can I do this? Because I'm not going to use this data to tell you the estimates of the performance. I'm going to use the test data to do this. So once I'm happy with all these operations, boom, I'm going to do the following. I'm going to take 24 hours at a time. I'm going to slide a window of 4 hours. So every time I have a new 4 hours, and at that time I'm going to make a decision. Either there is an alarm or not. So is this disk going to fail or not? And then how am I going to count? Very simply. If the detector sounds the alarm and the disk is changed in the data span I had, fine, I'm going to say I caught it. If it doesn't, I'm going to say this was a false positive. There's some mistakes here. You know, it could have been caught in the next month. I'm going to ignore that. So these are the results. We caught 15 out of the 17 unseen. That's 88.2% detection. We had 30 in that population of 1,190. I had 30 false positive, 30 disks I said they were going to fail, and they were not changed during that month. And the time lag I had was between 2 weeks and 8 hours. I look at the workload. The first thing I looked was stable for all the failed disks, both in training and testing. There was no differentiation in the workload. Now, here comes the part. So I look at the signals we had from SMART. I didn't have the power to look even more. So here are the signals. I was hoping to see something in, say, retry reads or retry writes, reset hard reads. There are many signals here that potentially should correlate with those things, and I couldn't find any. In some cases, you see them. You see spikes on those signals. In some cases, you don't. Why? I really don't know. And I didn't have enough disks in the data. My hypothesis is, though, that the performance signal, you know, the maximum latency, is just like fever. It's a symptom from many things, and it happens early enough, apparently. And then you have many causes. And I didn't have enough population to find solid correlations. So let me finish. Let me go through the numbers again. 88% detection, less than 3% of false positive. One performance signal, and I'll put an alarm. And this performance signal is trained on your disk, on the workloads of your disk. So the future work, what I'm hoping that this community will come out and rise to the challenge is, why doesn't it correlate to SMART? What's going on there? Is it just a question of population, or are we looking at the wrong things? What happens when there are other classes of disks? And then complete the system. I mean, what do we do with this information now? That's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have a time for a few questions. Any questions? Well, it is really surprising to see that there are lots of SMART signals. You are not able to find any correlations with the things. Any intuitions or anything about
my intuition is what I said. So the things I tried are fairly standard. So I tried to regress those signals to my detector, right? And there was no model I could find. I tried all kind of coefficients of correlations. My intuition is this failed for different reasons. Each one of these reasons is captured by a different SMART signal. And therefore, we couldn't find stable one. If we increase the population, perhaps we will find. So that's my intuition. But again, I haven't tried. Yeah. Yes.
Noman Rafiq from Google. So do you suggest any particular way in which we can use this kind of models? What kind of decisions we can make? And is false positives going to be low enough that we can actually take an action based on this data? Or is this going to be a problem? Do we need to improve the models further before we can?
Oh, of course, we need to improve the model.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, that's the point. Yeah. But is this good enough? Well, that depends on your application. So, in my case, for Azure, this may be enough to decide to move your application from one cluster to another. Because, am I going to stop your computation in the middle for a failed disk? This doesn't happen, right? There's a lot of replication and stuff like that. But this, I'm exaggerating a bit. But the decision is, do I pay the cost in moving you, and that is going to impinge on your performance, versus the thing is you're going to fail. And you have the number now to evaluate that cost. So one thing is move somebody. Another thing is decrease replication or do something with code erasure. But it depends on your application.
Jeff Kenning, Harvey Mudd College. Am I correct in understanding that this came about because there was an operator who was watching all sorts of different signals and spotted one that was correlated?
You are absolutely correct.
I think that operator needs a raise.
I think so too, by the way.
All right, I think time's up. Let's thank the speaker again.